Welcome to the Mind Money Spectrum podcast, where your hosts, Aaron Ogti and Trishul Patel, go beyond traditional finance questions to help you explore how to use your money to achieve the freedom you want in life.
In this episode, Trishul and Aaron explore different state and local tax rates across the country. In addition to state income taxes, they look at property taxes, sales taxes, and excise taxes on goods, such as on gas, alcohol, and tobacco. While income taxes are consistently progressive in the states that actually charge an income tax, most of the other taxes are regressive when compared to income. The overall impact is that taxes end up disproportionately burdening the poor, which has led to greater inequality over time. And now, on to our conversation.
Hi, my name is Aaron Ogti. I'm a financial advisor in the Bay Area, and I'm here with Trishul Patel, a wealth manager on the East Coast.
Hey, Aaron, great to be here today, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
Great to be here as well. So we were recently guests on XYPN Radio. It's another podcast for financial advisors, and they're actually asking us about our experience podcasting, not being the advisor part. And one of the things that kind of came up in that was Trishul, as a part of the intro, was explaining that he's actually moving from Pennsylvania to Florida soon. And so they were mentioning like, oh, you have compliance issues because advisors are registered either with the state or with the SEC. And after that conversation, Trishul and I kind of just chatting the way we do often, and it kind of coming like, Trishul's moving to a state with no state income tax. Florida has no state income tax. And California is kind of infamous for having one of the highest, if not the highest, state income tax. And so we actually just kind of thinking about it. There's a variety of things that for people all over the country, if you look at your state income tax, it makes a decently big difference, but it's different for everyone. And so we kind of want to talk about state income taxes in general, how that might appeal to everyone or affect everyone, how to think about that. And especially kind of my experience living in California and Trishul's expectations moving to Florida. So Trishul, kind of to start our conversation today on state income taxes, one, like, was this a factor in your decision to move from Pennsylvania to Florida at all, or is this just a nice little benefit?
I think it goes back a little ways beyond just this initial move back to Florida. In fact, I used to live in Florida before I ended up here in Pennsylvania. And there's probably a good chance that taxes are somewhat tied to that, maybe from like a third party perspective. The reason is because my former employer was in Florida, and there's a good chance they were in Florida for those types of reasons. In terms of establishing a hedge fund in Florida is more sensible for tax purposes than it might be in another jurisdiction like New York. And for that reason, I ended up there. And I was there for a handful of years. And after I left the hedge fund, I planned on doing some traveling and moving around. And I also had a non-compete that made it more sensible for me to not be in that area. But now none of that's an issue. So I'm looking forward to returning to Florida. And I'm also, frankly, looking forward to paying less in taxes. Sure.
I have had a few clients who have moved out of California, and it's actually usually not the state income tax rate that leads them to leave California. It's usually they sell their home that has appreciated significantly, and it's now well over $1 million in California, especially in the Bay Area, move to another state and use the equity in their home from here to buy a same size home and free up a lot of cash that allows them to retire early, or buy a much bigger home. But just that idea of moving from a high cost of living area to a low cost of living area. But for those who have made that move, the getting out of California's state income taxes, especially in retirement, is one of those little extra benefits. And so the kind of the reason we wanted to get in the conversation is that I had this kind of default assumption that California had the highest state income tax in the country. I know their top rate is 13.3%, and kind of just the way we are, Trisha was kind enough to point out, it's like, well, we don't want to look at just the max tax rate, which is kind of, we want to make sure we're, anytime we're looking at taxes and there's tax brackets, we're not, sometimes we're looking at the marginal dollar on some of those decisions we have to make, but most of the time we look at the effective tax rate, kind of the actual tax paid relative to income. And I honestly did not know where California ranked in a effective tax rate. And so we did a little bit of research, and obviously Trisha moving to Florida is going to be much lower, but we were kind of exploring this idea of just, okay, so even though California has the highest marginal tax rate, what states have higher effective tax rates? And I believe you have some good information on this.
Yeah, so the reason this question gets a little more complicated than just looking at those top of those newspaper article numbers where you see, like, you know, the California has the highest, you know, marginal tax rate out of any state, is because we've mentioned this before, when you're thinking about taxes, it's not necessarily only about the tax rate for that last dollar you earned, but it's the weighted average taxes on every dollar that you earn. Mm-hmm. For example, if you pay zero in taxes on the first million, but you paid 100% taxes on that last dollar, yeah, you're paying 100% taxes as your marginal tax rate on your, you know, that $1 past a million, but your weighted average taxes is close to zero. So it certainly does make a difference on what is the average taxes that you're paying. And that's where this effective tax rate number comes into play. It's looking at what is the tax rate across every single dollar that you earn. And then the other thing to realize is there's many ways that we get taxed beyond just income. There's corporate tax rates, there's personal income tax rates, there's sales tax rates, and there's excise taxes. So excise taxes are on items or specific goods, like on gasoline and things like that. And then there's, of course, property tax rates. So all of these numbers need to kind of come together to come up with a full picture of what's going on with state and local taxes. And what we kind of notice is if you look at all of this data in aggregate, you get a much different picture than some of those headline bullet points that we hear on the news. In fact, it's very clear to begin with that all 50 states have vastly different ways of taxing individuals, and they all have different systems. So you really have to look into the nuances across all these different taxes to see what's going on in a specific situation for a state. And then you also have to look at where somebody is in terms of how much income they're earning to see what is their effective tax rate for their particular situation, because it might be very different depending on if you're in, you know, let's say the lowest 20% versus the top 1%. So that it's important to also distinguish, you know, what's the effective tax rate across all these various taxes, kind of stratified against different levels of income. And once you look at this, you do get a pretty interesting story beyond what might be visible at those top numbers that you might hear around in the news.
I think that's a good point. I remember I was years ago having a conversation with someone from Texas, and they're talking about how their property tax rate was really high. And I don't remember the number, but it was definitely a couple of percentage points greater than California. Most of California is like 1.25%, depending on the county you're in, but between 1% and 1.25%. And there's a couple percentage points higher than that on the property tax basis. But I just kind of point out, well, except the home values, because there's just so much more land in Texas and cost of living is so much lower, you're paying a higher percentage on a much smaller dollar amount. So even though my tax rate is lower in California, the property values are so much higher, my dollars going towards property taxes is still higher. And it's that kind of thinking that is kind of really important to explore. The same thing with marginal versus effective tax rates. It's actually understanding, like, well, yes, sometimes the rates are higher, but when they're calculated based on a smaller dollar number, the actual taxes paid may still be lower. So I want to kind of get into a combination of these ideas of, one, let's look at just some of the higher effective tax rates, some of the states with no income tax. But then also, like you said, the other taxes they may pay. So, Tricia, what state does have the highest effective tax rate?
So when we want to look at effective tax rate, we want to look at it, again, across various income groups. So, for example, let's kind of start at the top 1% and see, you know, which state has the highest effective tax rate for the top 1%. Well, in that case, what I'm going to be leaning on here is there's a bunch of data that was released by the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, and they put out a website called whopays.org, which has a pretty nice treasure trove of data that segments all of this. And it's really awesome because they gave access to the data so I can kind of mine for this type of information. I'm going to do this in real time a little bit, but let's see if we can zero in on exactly that. So in this case, let's look at who has the highest effective tax rate for the top 1%. And it does turn out to be California. And the effective tax rate for the top 1% for state and local taxes is 12.4%.
So yeah, we're getting, this is, so incomes, I think we talked about last time, top 1% of the country, roughly that $400,000 number. So you'll have the marginal tax rate from a lot of California is getting close to that, is 9.3% on brackets, roughly 60K to 300K. So that kind of that most people, if they're getting close to that, is that's where a lot of that the money falls in that bracket. You get up to 400K, probably at 10.3%. Then it's 11.3, getting up to 600 grand, and 12.3 on 600 grand and up. And then on incomes over a million, there's an extra 1% for mental health services. That's where we get our 13.3%. It's actually not a part of the tax bracket per se, but a lot of the income to get, like, right before that 1% is that 9.3. But then if you get above, they got that top 1%, you're looking at rates in the scale of 10.3 to 13.3. So it does make sense that for that top 1%, they're already starting at kind of paying at least 9.3% for a lot of it. And then everything up above that just keeps pushing that effective tax rate up higher.
Right. And this is for total state and local taxes. So this includes the income tax and all the other taxes that you might be paying at this income level.
Yes. Yes. So you're saying
property sales.
Okay. Yeah. Sales taxes, again, depending on the county, sometimes on a scale of like 7 to 11%, 12% sometimes on sales taxes. Again, some cities, I think San Francisco has a pretty high sales tax that adds on top, but a lot of the sales taxes will be 8 to 10% around the state.
Right, and so this is where an interesting distinction comes into play, because what we're doing here is we're kind of normalizing, you know, sales tax, for example, by the amount of income somebody earns. And this is why sales tax in particular is a pretty regressive tax. So very quickly, the difference between a progressive tax and a regressive tax is a tax system that's progressive will typically tax higher income earners more than a lower income earner. So if you're making $1 million a year, you would pay a higher percentage of your income in a particular tax if it's supposed to be progressive. And there's many schools of thought that say that this is sensible because if you earn more, you have a greater capacity to pay a higher income or a higher percentage of your income in taxes. So the goal of our tax system is hopefully to be progressive. But what we're kind of seeing, and sales tax is a great example of this notion, where in fact, sales tax ends up being quite more regressive, meaning it's kind of the flip, meaning the lower your income, the higher percentage of your income you end up paying in taxes from a sales tax perspective. And the reason this kind of plays out is you can kind of imagine if you have two people earning the same amount and they're spending the same amount, then they're going to have the same effective tax rate. But if one person is earning 10 times more than the other person, yet they're still spending the same amount, well, then the person who's earning 10 times more is going to have a much lower effective tax rate when it comes to sales tax, because that's all dependent on consumption, not the amount of money you earn.
Okay. So I think we'll give it numbers as an example. So if someone earns 100,000, I know that's already above the median, but let's say they earn 50,000, they're spending 30,000. That might be a little high, but because I think rent usually doesn't have sales tax. So, but let's say they're spending 30,000. Okay. And they are paying, again, I'm gonna make my math easier, a 10% sales tax, even though most of it's going to be less than that, but I want to make my math easier. So they're paying $3,000 in sales tax. So, that 3,000 is as a percentage of their 50,000 income. Try and do some math on a calculator real quick, is 6% of their income.
Right.
Whereas if someone who makes $1 million, let's say they're still spending 200 grand, maybe 100 grand. So if they're spending 100 grand, okay, and we have that same 10% tax rate, they're paying $10,000 in sales tax. So the $10,000 on $100,000 spending versus $3,000 on a $30,000 spending, but that $10,000 in tax divided by their $1 million income is only 1%. So, and it, like we could play around with the numbers, but you see this, and it's kind of why you're making that point that's regressive, is that yes, the dollar number of sales tax is higher, but the tax sales tax calculated as a percentage of their income is regressive. It's going to be a greater rate on lower incomes and usually a lower rate on higher incomes, because spending does not go up one to one as income goes up. As income goes up, there's usually more savings or investment. And so you only need kind of so much to live your lifestyle. Now, again, in our example, the person with $1 million was still spending three times as much as the other one, but as a percentage of their income, if they're spending a lesser percentage of their income, and therefore sales tax is a lesser percentage of their income.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of interesting. The numbers you chose, frankly, align with what the data says in terms of what happens in California. So if you're in like the second 20th percentile, not the bottom 20th, but second 20th, then you're going to pay about 6% of your income in this type of sales or excise taxes a year.
Man, I feel like I pulled those numbers. I just educated guess a little bit, but I did not look at that. And to be that close, like, that's a bit of an ego boost to me right now. Like, yeah, I kind of know what I'm talking about.
Good job, Aaron. You can also pat yourself back on what happens with the 1%. It's around 0.8%. So you had 1%. So good job there too.
Oh man, I feel like I'm walking lighter. I'm walking taller. Oh man, this feels good.
But you can see, you know, just with a simple example, and it's also reflected in the actual data, the numbers in terms of what happens, that yeah, you can have a situation where the top 1% is paying 5 to 6% less of their income in taxes than the bottom, you know, 20% or 40%.
And this is for things like sales taxes and excise taxes.
Yeah, that's right. So that's why when you look at the total tax situation and you kind of compare that for you know, let's take again California, for example, the highest 20%, as we mentioned, the top 1% in California is going to be paying about 12.4% of their income in taxes. And the lowest 20% is going to be paying 10.5%. So there's not that huge of a difference, even though in the top 1%, you're earning about 50 times more.
You're earning 50 times more. Oh, man, that's, yeah.
Well, to be clear, though, so in this data, the top 1% is if you're above 500,000-ish in income.
Okay.
The average in the top 1% group is around 1.6 million.
Oh, yeah.
And that makes sense. The average in the lowest 20% is around 12,000. So, what's 1.6 million divided by 12,000?
I was thinking you were going like
roughly 100 times more income.
Yeah. I was thinking roughly 20K to a million was, I think, where you got that was my guess where you got that 50 times more number.
Yeah, that's where I got it in my mind. But The actual number is 130 times more.
Okay. So I guess, again, the kind of thing, state income taxes are different. It's important to look at effective tax rate. Property tax rates are different, but cost of living and the actual value of the home that upon which that percentage is calculated. Sales taxes and other excise taxes might be a little more, are probably regressive. Do you have any information like what those other tax, combine, does Florida, I guess if Florida doesn't have an income tax, do they have higher sales tax and property taxes in terms of either rates or as percentage of income?
Well, okay, so let's look at the national average, and then we'll kind of zoom into country state by state comparisons. So when we look at the national average, let's look at, for example, that sales taxes and excise taxes. Now that's the most regressive tax out there, meaning the lower your income, the higher percentage you're going to pay in these types of taxes. And again, this kind of includes general sales, between individuals and excise taxes that are on there. And then also there's certain sales and excise taxes on businesses, which could be attributed to somebody that's a low income earner if they have a business, but their income is just not high. But in all of these cases, yeah, you end up in a situation where that's highly regressive in nature. As far as national averages go, if you're in the bottom 20%, you're paying close to 7% of your income in for these types of taxes. And if you're in the top 1%, you're paying close to 1% of your income for these types of taxes. Now, let's think about property taxes. That's kind of the next big bucket. Typically, you pay property taxes from your home, but if you own a home, but also if you're renting, you're kind of subsidizing that as well. It's not like if you're renting, you that money that you pay to the landlord doesn't end up in the property tax bucket. It kind of does from a third party. And then also you might pay some additional property taxes for a car and other things like that. Now that tax also, frankly, ends up being quite regressive in nature, if you look at it. Now, on the one hand, we kind of think if you have a larger home, you would end up having a larger property tax. But if you kind of normalize this by the fact that your income is also larger, then you end up still with a regressive tax structure. So if you're in the lowest 20%, you're going to be paying close to 4.2% of your income in property taxes. And if you're on the top 1%, you're going to be paying less than half of that, around 1.7%. So it's just another situation where, do we want a situation where the top 1% is paying a lower tax rate as a percentage of their income as compared to the bottom 20%? That's what it is with property taxes.
Yeah, I think it's also
if you normalize by income.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think we've seen other data when it looks like household spending kind of if you have a median household or even below median household versus a top 10%, top 5%, not necessarily even going to top 1%, the higher income families spending a lower percentage of their income on housing, whether it's rent or mortgage, or rent, like you said, indirectly pays the property taxes of the landlord, and the owner of the house, even if a mortgage, they also pay the property taxes. But again, it's not that one-to-one correlation between housing costs and income. It's as your income goes up, your likely housing costs don't go up as much. And so again, just like our sales tax example, if you're paying less towards your housing as a percentage of your income, then even though the rate might be exactly the same, which is not safe across the country, but even like within the same jurisdiction, if the rate stays the same within the same jurisdiction, that property tax is going to be a greater percentage of your income than someone who's wealthier, where while they are paying more in terms of dollars, it's still a lower rate compared to their income.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, what we're hoping kind of is there to kind of moderate this regressiveness is the income taxes. Our hope is that the income taxes would be progressive in nature. That's how they're designed, to hopefully balance things out such that if you are earning more, you end up paying more at a state and local level. And if we look at just income taxes, then yes, just income taxes are progressive in nature. If you're in the bottom 20%, you're going to be paying close to nothing in state and local income taxes. And if you're in the top 1%, then you're going to be paying close to 5% in state and local income taxes. So there is a good amount of progressiveness there. And the notion is, yes, your income is higher and therefore you will pay a higher percentage of taxes. But then, you know, the big overarching notion here is, okay, let's add up all these together and see where you end up. Well, if you add up the sales, the property taxes, and income taxes to get the total tax situation, and you compare the bottom 20% versus the top 1%, you still end up with a situation that's regressive in nature. So in this case, if you're in the bottom 20%, you're going to be paying about 11.5% of your income in taxes. And if you're in the top 1%, you're going to be paying about 7.4% of your income in state and local taxes. So it's certainly not a system that's progressive at all. It's in fact regressive when you look at it in terms of all the taxes that an individual has to pay. And what that kind of means is if you're in the top 1%, you have a 4% edge against somebody in the bottom 20% each year that you don't have to pay taxes on, that somebody in the lowest 20% has to pay taxes on. So you can take that extra 4% of your income and you can, you know, invest it and grow. And that means your wealth will accelerate farther and more quickly than somebody in the bottom 20%. And, you know, the overarching case here is that's a strong contributor to the income inequalities that we've been seeing. You know, just the fact that our tax situation has this overarching regressive quality, especially when you look at it from the state and local level as we're doing today.
So one of the things I want to ask, this is going to be more of a philosophical question. For something like a tax on gasoline, there have been pretty good studies that show if the purpose of the tax is to reduce gasoline consumption to help the environment, there's a decently strong correlation that as gas taxes go up, people use gas less. They actually do spend less on gas. They use fewer gallons, and it actually does help the environment if the goal is to reduce gasoline usage. And you see this around a few other things that might be considered like more vice taxes or are kind of a little bit of paternalism by the government with things like cigarettes and alcohol and other tobacco products, where you see if taxes are higher on those types of products, it does reduce usage a little bit. And then kind of raising taxes on things like cigarettes and alcohol are very easy politically, that these are kind of those vices that if we're trying to both increase money to the local jurisdiction, whether it's city, county, state, and reduce these vices that have what are called negative externalities. And what that means is, just because I don't smoke, if the person next to me is smoking, I'm still suffering. Same thing with alcohol. Most commonly, if someone is driving drunk, even though I'm not driving drunk, I'm still at risk of being hit by a drunk driver. And so when it comes to kind of raising taxes on things like tobacco and alcohol, it's very easy politically. It increases money to the state or county and does reduce some of those usages. But when it comes to that gas tax, and it works for the same thing with the alcohol and tobacco, they are truly regressive, that the lower incomes might be living farther from where they work and might have longer commutes. They are for a variety of other reasons, there's not as if they might be driving a little bit more, but just the fact that they're driving more at all than a higher income earner means that they are paying that higher gas tax, and it's one of the more regressive taxes out there, but genuinely does help the environment. And so one, I'm curious just kind of your thoughts and philosophies on that, of using taxes to curb or reduce usage versus the fact that it is regressive. And it's kind of like we're choosing, like, which evil do you find less? You're trying to choose between the lesser of two evils, like knowledge. But I'm curious kind of your personal thoughts and philosophies when it comes to that.
I think two main things. One thing is that we've seen some evidence where if a government is collecting money that's meant to kind of curb a certain use, then it would make sense that the funds that those funds end up being collected for actually help go towards, you know, maybe funding education or programs or some sort of system to make sure that those funds actually go towards curbing a certain use rather than just collecting that money and doing something wholly different. And that's one issue I kind of see with these types of taxes. And the second issue I see is, yes, it's sensible to have that, to perhaps have this type of excise tax, for example, on gasoline for environmental purposes. But at the end of the day, I think it's also possible to design such a system such that it's not regressive in nature. There's no reason why we couldn't come up with a system that could do both, except for the fact that perhaps we don't have the conviction to do so.
I'm almost like, how can you think of, like, how would that work? Like, how would trying to tie a gas tax to income rather than gallons used, like, how would that curb gasoline usage?
Well, so for example, I don't know if you've heard this kind of anecdote, but there's a country, I'm not sure if it's Scandinavian, but I know it's European, where based on traffic police tickets, if you're caught speeding, that's going to be tied to your income. So for example, if somebody gets a speeding ticket for $200 and they make, you know, $20,000 a year, that's a big deal. But if you're making $50 million a year, $200 is, you know, change in the back pocket of the front seat.
Yeah.
And how is that going to curb somebody who really makes millions and millions of years? It doesn't make a dent, but it's still the same fine. So, you know, the anecdote here is, I believe there was this one jurisdiction that, a wealthy person was speeding and they got fined like $50,000 or something like that. Now, that sounds silly, but maybe it makes sense because that's the amount of pain that somebody feels if they're making close to $20,000 and they get fined, you know, $1,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if we're looking to curb behavior, then perhaps it should be normalized based upon income. And I'm not saying that's the solution, but for this particular issue, but I'm saying if we're willing to think a little bit outside of the box with our convictions on, you know, A, first, do we think a system should be progressive in nature or regressive in nature? And if we say, you know, I think we all like this regressive stance on our taxes, why not make the taxes, you know, a higher percentage on the poor, and we can kind of just move on. If that's what we want, then yeah, the no need to change, right? But if there is a conviction to change, I think there is the ability to come up with a solution that's sensible.
So a couple of things I want to kind of make sure we add in before we wrap up. Being in California, using municipal bonds becomes much more important for any taxable investment account. So, and we're kind of totally changing gears here, but for municipal bonds, there's a Supreme Court ruling that the federal government cannot tax states' debt. This goes back a long time. And so any municipal bond is federally income tax free. The interest is federally income tax free. There's some types of bonds that have AMT concerns, but for today, we're going to ignore those. If you are a resident of California paying California taxes and you buy a California muni bond, California also allows that to be state income tax free. So it's already federally tax free, but as a way for California the state to encourage its own residents to kind of invest in the state infrastructure by buying the California mini bonds, they make it state income tax free. And so this becomes a very important part of an asset allocation strategy. And you can actually calculate a taxable equivalent yield where, because the municipalities, because municipalities know that their bonds are state income tax free, they can pay a lower interest rate compared to a corporation of a similar credit quality. They're the same kind of credit scores or same rating, because the corporate bonds are taxable while these muni bonds are income tax free. And so you can actually do these calculations and they'll kind of, these are lined very well. But if you're at a high enough tax bracket, then you the muni bond income being state income tax free in addition to federally tax free becomes very important. And especially in California, where you have those, again, those really high both marginal tax rates and effective tax rates. Other states that have high income tax rates for investors looking to use muni bonds in their state of residence becomes a little more important. I think Pennsylvania was one of those. I'm trying to think of other states where I've seen state-specific muni bond funds. I was wondering if you know any off the top of your head.
I think there's actually a good amount of them because, yeah, the notion is if you live in a particular state that has muni bonds, then even if your local jurisdiction has muni bonds, you're kind of in the best of all three scenarios, meaning you could be exempt from federal, state, and local taxes on your municipal bonds if you're in that particular jurisdiction. And it's something definitely to look out for.
And then the last thing, so kind of think about that. If you own a national muni ETF, you'll still be federally tax-free, and then you actually the 1099 has to show what percentage of your interest from that national muni ETF is attributable to which states. So you can find out, okay, 5% of my interest that I pay or that I earned on my muni bonds comes from my state of residence. And so I can get a little bit of a tax break. But also for professional athletes, when they do their own little taxable equivalent yield, that same idea, But right now, as the NFL goes through free agency, it's pretty well known that the teams in California need to pay just a little bit extra, because it's now kind of, we're talking about like the net income after state taxes would be lower compared to states like Texas or Florida. And so you do see these, it's so similar to that taxable equivalent yield on the muni bonds compared to a corporate. In this one, it's a net income. So if you need a higher salary in California than you do in Texas or Florida, so that after state income taxes, your net is about the same. It's not quite as clean, because also if someone who plays for the Dallas Cowboys, they're in Texas and all their home games, they don't pay income taxes. But if they go play against the Los Angeles Chargers, then California will come to collect taxes on the income they earned while in California. So it's usually a one game check for that game played in California, and actually plays out anytime they go to a different state, which is about half their games. They have to file tax returns in each of these other states, and they'll pay the other state's state income tax for that individual game. And it's just it's called a jock tax, but it's also entertainers have the same thing. If they're having concerts or shows in other states, they pay their income attributable to that particular event. They pay it at the state's rate of the state where the event is. And so it's just one thing when it comes to state income tax rates, fans of professional athletes and entertainers kind of are aware of that just a little bit more.
Yeah, that makes sense. I remember when we were hiring with the hedge fund in Florida, part of our sales pitch was, if somebody was from New York, we'd say, you get an automatic, X percent salary bump just by coming down here and not having to pay your state income tax, your local income tax. Of course, you're going to pay probably double with cost of living expenses if you plan on living in Manhattan versus, someplace down near Palm Beach.
We'll give you this. Yes, I like that. We'll give you the same exact income, but your net's going to go up because your tax rate went down and your cost of living is lower. So you have more to save, invest, or spend on discretionary expenses. So it's like, we don't even have to give you a salary bump to get you. We'll just take advantage of the fact that we're in Florida to get you to come down here.
Yeah. And I could say it is a pretty good incentive if you kind of add it in together.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
For me, the other thing was, of course, obviously the weather, but the fact that it's very hard to find a job where in Manhattan you can walk, 5 to 10 minutes to work and not have to, pay an exorbitant amount in rent. So of course, cost of living is a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Anything else that you think of when you think of different state taxes or state income tax or property tax, or like you said, the excise taxes?
Well, the numbers I had mentioned earlier, they're actually the aggregate value across all 50 states. But if you kind of zero in, you find that at a state-by-state level, there are, frankly, some pretty big differences in terms of, this progressive-regressive notion on a state-by-state level. And I'll just kind of lay out a few states that are at the extremes of this condition. So, for example, if you look at Washington State, the lowest 20% is going to pay around 18% of their income in taxes at the state and local level. Huh. But in that same state, if you're the top 1%, you're only going to pay around 3% of your income.
Oh, okay. So sometimes I wonder if there are kind of correlations between more liberal versus conservative states. Like the feeling I get is the more conservative states tend to be a little more regressive, because I don't know if it's because they just they're either trying to apply flat tax rates and not considering incomes, or actually that's what it sounds almost like, with but or they just are specifically trying to target lower tax rates in general. But Washington, I thought, would have been one of the more liberal states, so I'm a little surprised to see that it is that regressive.
Yeah, I mean, I'll read off the top, you know, like five or 10 in this. So it's Washington, then Florida, Texas, South Dakota, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Wyoming, and Arizona. So that's the top 10. And yeah, all of these states feature the lowest 20% paying, you know, multiples of what the top 1% would be paying.
Yeah. What about, do you have states that are most progressive?
Yeah, so at the bottom of the list is, so DC takes the cake, where for DC, the bottom 20% is paying 6.3%, and the top 1% is paying 9.5%. So, 3% difference.
Okay.
Yep, and then California is second. So we mentioned the bottom 20% is paying 10.5%, and the top 1% is paying 12.4%. So around two points different. And yeah, the top 10 for, this scale, this side of the scale, is DC, California, Vermont, Minnesota, New Jersey, Delaware, New York, Maine, Maryland, and Utah.
Okay. So if, I don't even know do we even have any conclusions? I feel like it sounds like those who have the means to move to a different state would target those more regressive states anyways, or just states like Florida and Texas that don't have the state income tax.
Well, if you have a higher income, yeah. If you have the means and a higher income, yeah. You know, the reason this all started is because I read a statistic that I wanted to kind of fact check. And the statistic is like, off the top of your head, if you think about it, where would you rather move for taxes? Would you rather live in Texas or California?
I would have thought Texas.
Right. And, the statistics I read is, actually, on average, you're going to pay more taxes in Texas.
Because of all the property taxes and excise taxes?
Yeah, if you're in a lower income. It's not until you get to the higher incomes do you actually start paying a higher amount of taxes in California.
Oh, I see. Okay. So
yeah.
So that kind of the average person or median person in either those states, California might be a lower effective overall tax rate than Texas. It's only the that's actually really interesting. So it's only the like you said, that going back to the beginning, like the headline news of California having the highest tax rate only applies to the top 1 to 20% or so.
Yeah, so that's why it's important to understand it's not necessarily just that high marginal tax rate. The conversation is far more nuanced than that. It has to do with effective tax rates and all the different types of tax rates. And then you want to juxtapose that to the income level you're thinking about.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for that. That's a great thing to end on. Thank you for educating me today. I appreciate it.
Good stuff, Aaron. I enjoyed kind of digging through these numbers, and hopefully they'll be insightful to others as well. And thanks, everybody, for listening. If you're enjoying these episodes, do spread the word.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
We appreciate you joining us today for this episode of the Mind Money Spectrum podcast. Be sure to visit mindmoneyspectrum.com to access the entire library of episodes. Remember, it's not black and white, but the wide spectrum of gray area where you get to pursue the freedoms you want in life. Opinions voiced in this material are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested in directly. Have a nice day.